You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe, New Mexican, and radiocafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi.
The Lensic Presents 2019-2020 season kicks off in September, featuring performances by the New Power Generation, Tig Notaro, Buffy St. Marie, Chick Corea, Storm Large, the Peking Acrobats, Drum Tao, Hubbard Street Dance Chicago, Arlo Guthrie, and many more. You can also see the Met Opera live on screen, National Theater live in HD, and the Great Art on Screen series. Don't miss these exciting performances at the Lensic. Get tickets today at lensic.org. Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation moves public education in bold new directions through grants, programs, and advocacy. Funding learning initiatives and community programs, visit lanlfoundation.org for more information. And many thanks to the Lanl Foundation for support of the Radio Cafe. I'd like now to welcome Alex Hudson. We're here to talk about the Elliot Trilogy, which is three plays by Chiara Alegría Udes that are being presented starting on September 26th. It's a collaboration among several theater organizations in Santa Fe. Welcome, Alex, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be on the air with you.
Yeah, me too. And this is a really interesting and really exciting project. So first of all, let's talk about this trilogy called the Elliot Trilogy. Chiara Alegría Udes is an American playwright of half Puerto Rican origin from Philadelphia. She actually won the Pulitzer Prize for the second of these three plays. Tell us about her and how you came across this body of work.
Sure. Chiara Alegría Udes has always been really near and dear to our hearts at Teatro Paraguas. I'm a company member there. We're the bilingual theater company in Santa Fe, and she's excellent. She's so, so good. So we've always really been familiar with her work and really loved working with her plays. We've put on, I think four now at this point. We've had another tour in production as well. We did Water by the Spoonful, the middle portion of the Elliot Trilogy, in 2014. We did Yemaya's Belly in 2015. We did Daphne's Dive last season, and we had a touring production of 26 Miles coming from NHCC, also directed by Valle Rivera, who's directing one of her plays for the trilogy this time. So we've always just really loved Chiara, and she's been very much present when we're doing our play selection committee. We've always also loved the Elliot Trilogy. We first did Water by the Spoonful, but then we also did a reading of Elliot in 2015, I believe that summer, and just we're just so taken by it. And then reading The Happiest Song Plays Last and seeing just how vastly different the plays are, but like how beautifully aligned, you know, following that trajectory of Elliot's life and of Yaz's life in some ways, it really moved us. And so a couple friends of mine, Roxanne Tapia and Jonathan Harrell, who are also company members at Paraguas, we were just like having a beer at Duel one night. This was in 2016. And we were like, wouldn't that be cool if we could have three different theaters do each of the plays and we could stagger the run so that if people wanted to see all three in the same weekend, they could. And here we are 3 years later doing it.
Doing exactly that.
Yeah. Which is just so, so thrilling, and so thrilling to have Ironweed Productions and Santa Fe Playhouse on board as well. They've just been amazing. Everyone's just been amazing all the way through. Yeah.
Ironweed Productions, of course, Scott Harrison, who's been on this program many times, wonderful director and actor, mm-hmm. Teatro Paraguas, as you said, the bilingual theater company of Santa Fe, and Santa Fe Playhouse, which is kind of a center of theater and has been for generations, I think, at this point.
Like 100 years.
Yeah. Tell us more about the Elliot Trilogy. It starts out with this character, Elliot Ortiz, and his family. It's a play with very few characters. It's a war play. Goes on from there. Give us a sense of the kind of through line and the trajectory of these three plays.
Sure. So yeah, our through line is Elliot, right? Elliot Ortiz, and then Yasmin, his cousin, his prima, is in the last two, but she sort of takes over for Ginny, who's the matriarch in the first play, the play I'm directing. So it's like, oh, right, we're just watching a young man from 18 to about 26 Yes and no, right? Because in the first play, as you said, right, we follow three generations of men in war, Korea, Vietnam, and Iraq. Elliot's grandfather, father, and his mother was a nurse in the Army Corps. And then Elliot in Iraq. And then the next play, Water by the Spoonful, follows him as he's come back from Iraq. And without giving too much away, it deals with the loss of the matriarch in the family. And it deals with addiction. It's a play about addiction. And a lot of it takes place in an online chat room, which is delightful. It's done so incredibly well. And it mirrors, but it's entirely different also to our fugue space that's in our play, where we have the three different war scenes going on at the same time. And they're sort of paralleling one another. And then our last play, Happiest Song Plays Last, is in some ways the most traditional play in that, like, people are usually, well, no, there are often scenes that are taking place in Philly and in Jordan at the same time, right? Because it follows Elliot Ortiz as he goes back to the Middle East, this time working on a movie set for a docudrama. And so it's about sort of the redemption and about his relationship with the Middle East. So you can see they're just hugely different plays, but they sort of contain the multitudes that is one person and one young person's experience.
I think one of the interesting things about it, I was just reading the first play, which was about Elliot. It's called A Soldier's Fugue. And this fugue, I mean, if you think about the musical form of the fugue, with multiple parts coming in, it's like the more complex version of, you know, a round that we might have sung when we were young. That's kind of like the metaphor for these three generations of warriors. And it's so interesting to see this because, I mean, I haven't seen the rehearsals. I have not seen the production, obviously. These are just opening. We'll talk about the details in a little while. But there's a sense in this play, it's so kind of poetic and almost minimalist in a way. And so much suggestion of what's going on as opposed to, you know, theatrical realism.
Yeah, sure.
Which requires a lot of imagination on the part of the people who are staging and directing this play.
Yeah, in some ways, yes. In other ways, you know, Chiara's so good, or Liz is so good with her language, right? Because even though there are these many, melodic lines, right, that are coming together and clashing in a sort of very stylized way, right? We're simultaneously in three different places, three different years, different people we're following. But at the same time, the language is so lush. And so even if it's poetic and lyrical, it manages to ground us very nicely, I think. We'll see. But so far, it's been good. And it's a delight. It's an absolutely gorgeous play. And I love that from the beginning, that it's that very gritty with that very ethereal, and it works.
Right. And the way the notes are in the play, there's kind of two scenes, two, what would you call it, backdrops. One is very bleak, suggestive of war, and one and death, and one is very lush, suggestive of gardens and life. And those seem to be themes not only in this play, but also carrying through, I think, the whole trilogy.
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely that empty space, which is the place, the bare and the bleak. It's bright, but it's harsh, a harsh light. It sort of carries through definitely that sort of chat room feel in different places. And then the other one is, right, the garden, which does come through. And we see it in a very real sense in Happiest Song, where Yaz is literally moving the garden in so it doesn't freeze in a cold winter. Whereas in Elliot, A Soldier's Fugue, it's more of just a metaphorical space. Though it's also a very real space. Ginny has this very beautiful monologue that takes place in the garden where she explains how it came to be. And again, it's a sort of magic realism, right? Like it's a real space, but it's of course much, much larger than that. And yeah, it's been really neat getting to really build two principal looks, right, in terms of lighting, but then how to abstract and how to sort of do a variation, sort of the fugue within those, like, you know, within each scene to vary it, but then still tie it to those two spaces. And I think it is a good note, like that Chiara notes in her script, right, that both spaces are holy in their own way.
You're director of this first play, which is so kind of intensively about war and about
pain and about the kinds of pain that is inflicted on soldiers, essentially, mm-hmm. on whatever mm-hmm. side they're on. And I was sort of wondering as I read it whether this was, whether you considered it an anti-war play or how you feel about that.
Yeah, I think that's a really, I mean, I suppose it's anti-war in the way, you know, the things they carried is anti-war, right? It sort of just puts, you know, by Tim O'Brien, right? And all great war pieces generally have that aspect of horror, of realism. And I think it's hard to say that it wouldn't be anti-war. It is. It's never didactic, right? It never, you know, I think of that iconic Vietnam War era photo of the man in the helmet, right, where he had written "war is hell" across the helmet, right? It never says that. Never says war is hell, but she just shows us this intergenerational trauma, and she shows us the impossible things that are asked of these young men and young women, speaking of the nurse corps. And it's a stark, realistic look. And yeah, I think it's anti-war by just showing, not telling.
Exactly. Yeah, that's sort of what I got too. And at the same time, respectful of everybody who, for whatever reason, is called to do that kind of
absolutely.
Service, that kind of fighting.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It never disrespects. It only honors, right? The four veterans that are in the play. They're all veterans.
Yeah, exactly. I was wondering as I was reading the second play, because as you say, a chunk of it takes place in chat rooms. How do you stage a chat room on the theater stage?
You're gonna have to see, you know, as I'm just directing the first one, I haven't seen how Vali Rivera, right? She is our director for Water by the Spoonful that Scott Harrison is producing out of Ironweed. I don't know. And at Theater Walk, we were all doing our performances on the hours, so we didn't even get sneak peeks. Back in 2014, when we did it at Paraguas, I was lucky enough to get to see that production. It was done somewhat with projections and then a different leveled platforms. And then people, you know, would just sort of would stand or sit to show that they had logged on or logged off, but they didn't do the mime, you know, they didn't hunch over the keyboard and like mime doing that. And we didn't actually see that interaction, but I don't know. I know it's going to be good because everyone involved in Water by the Spoonful, you know, they're brilliant theater artists, but I don't know how they're doing it. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. I think it's important to see these kinds of plays now that are depicting the reality that so many people are living, which is their lives are, for better or worse, probably in a lot of ways worse, although I'm not really sure, inside of screens and virtual relationships, essentially, that as these, you know, as the second play, for example, shows, sometimes turn into real relationships. But so many contacts happen online, people who change each other's lives and never meet each other. And so that's part of the reality that theater is now depicting.
Yeah, a very excellent point, and also shows a really unique moment of the internet when everyone's so deeply like embedded in their screens. You know, back in 2012, that was the end of Yahoo chat rooms, and it's much harder to be anonymous in sort of similar chat rooms. There's Tumblr, there's, you know, Reddit, there's other things, but those Yahoo chat rooms really were a cultural phenomenon. And I think she tackles it really beautifully about, yes, the negative aspects, but also that power of being able to create a truly anonymous, truly support group, you know?
Right. So these three plays are being performed in Santa Fe, and I noticed you have all women directors and woman playwright. And I thought this is really a moment. I mean, it's not happening suddenly, but theater by women across the board. You know, actors on stage always, but now writers, directors, and everything else, we're finally kind of coming into our own.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's, you know, like people are like, so you plan to do this? And I'm like, no, it just worked out that way. And I think it's pretty delightful that it did. It is, you know, we've got women designers and we've got women involved in every aspect, as well as men involved in most aspects, though. Yeah, not directing.
So the first play of the Elliot trilogy, Elliot, A Soldier's Fugue, is opening, well, this podcast is dropping on Thursday, September 26th. And if you're listening on that day, it's opening tonight, Thursday, September 26th, at Teatro Paraguas, which is 3205 Calle Marie in Santa Fe. And then the next play, Water by the Spoonful, opens on October 3rd. And the last play opens on October 10th. Water by the Spoonful is at the Teatro Paraguas studio space, 3205A Calle Marie. It's next door to Teatro Paraguas, two spaces right next door to each other. And The Happiest Song Plays Last is at the Santa Fe Playhouse, 142 East DeVargas Street. And that opens October 10th. Ladies and gentlemen, you don't have to memorize all that. You can go to any of the three websites, teatroparaguas.org, ironweedsantafe.com, or santafeplayhouse.org. The information is all there. But they're staggered in such a way that you can see all three plays in one weekend, or you can see them over the course of a month, starting September 26th, closing October 27th. And I think it'll be interesting. I mean, if somebody, for example, is visiting Santa Fe, it's like people who visit the opera over the course of 1 week, they can see all the operas in August. Or if you live here, you can see them over the course of the summer. But it's the same thing with this. Do you feel like people should see all three? Like, do you get the meaning of the whole greater work if you see them all?
I mean, they're all beautiful standalone plays. They'd be fine to just see one, but I do think it gets richer, and it's such a cool concept, and everything is sort of deepened. The themes, when you see them carried through, when you see Elliot as a guy in his mid to late 20s instead of just barely 18, I think it is very powerful. And we're offering discounted tickets if you actually go to their website, to any, like, to the Santa Fe Playhouse or Paraguas or Ironweed. You can order tickets just for one show, or you can get tickets for the trilogy, and they are discounted if you get all three.
Now, is the same person, there's different characters in each play, but is it the same person playing Elliot in all three?
No, we do have three different Elliots, which we toyed with the idea, but since we wanted to have all three up on a weekend, and there'd just be, you know, there's just no way, right? So, like,
yeah, that person would have to be hospitalized.
Yeah, right. They would never be able to, and we would have to have, like, yeah, it'd have to be like back-to-back shows that whole weekend. Yeah, the poor person. So that, and then also, I think it is really powerful to get to see Elliot at, you know, the last two plays are closer. He's like in his late teens, early 20s, and mid 20s, but it is powerful to see Elliot at his actual age, right? Our actor Luca Pacheco is doing a wonderful job. He's a senior at New Mexico School for the Arts, and he's just barely 18. Right. And I think it's powerful to see a kid going to war. You know, he's a young adult. He absolutely is, but also he's 18. And to see that visual, it's an arresting image, just as it's nice to see Elliot in his mid-20s, which our other two actors are.
Did you cast, you know, like in movies, they have John and then the young John when he's 7 years old, but they try to make it look like the same person. Was there any attempt to kind of have some family resemblance?
I mean, no, like we mostly just went for like the good, you know, the good auditions.
The best, yeah, the best actor.
Though, like, so, but we did try, like, we did have an Elliot photo shoot where we had all three of them and we took a series of them together, which was pretty neat. It actually, it made the cover of the Pasatiempo last Friday, which is exciting. But then we took them out to supper. So we all sat around and they got to know each other, at least on a, you know, on a personal level, and get to relate with one another, which, you know, our casts generally haven't been able to do much. We did have a little after party after the theater walk of all three parts of the trilogy to get to sort of relate to the, you know, the two Yazes and the three Elliots and how Ginny, it was fun, you know, when the cast of Water by the Spoonful was like, oh, you're Ginny. We hear all about you in our play. It's neat to make those sort of connections. But to go back to your point, we didn't look for physicality so much as just, we tried to make, you know, obviously Luca looks younger than the other two, and but the other two Elliots, they're similar enough age that it didn't have to be so marked, that the difference between 23 and 26, you know.
Yeah, that is interesting that the three, it's three different plays, three different casts, but all inhabiting
somewhat of the same world. And so
yeah.
Do your actors familiarize themselves, or does each set of actors familiarize themselves with the other two plays? I mean, that must be, to some extent, part of the process.
For the second two plays, absolutely. For mine, I didn't discourage it, but I also didn't encourage it, because I, the only character of mine that is in the other two plays is Elliot.
Right.
And the Elliot of Elliot, A Soldier's Fugue has to be naive. He has to be new to the world. And I think in several ways, it's good for him. He's obviously caught on, it's not like I'm like, no, you can't read the other plays. You can't know what, of course he knows, but not dwelling on the idea of this eventual redemption or the eventual addiction, but just really dwelling in that immediate moment, right? It's such a play of immediacies, even though it's sort of dipping between time periods. Elliot's always in war, and he's always sort of trapped there, or he's being forced to talk about it in these interviews, and it sort of weaves in. And so, but yes, the other two plays, they've talked about how, like, the Yazes are two, Yasmins are both But I Was Bored members, and they're good friends of mine. So having that camaraderie helps. And yeah, they've been, reading the other plays, especially the last one, which I think leans more heavily on the first two. But then in the first one, we never see Grandpop again. We never see Pop again. We hear a lot about Jenny, but she's almost become this mythic character. So it's cool to see her in the flesh in ours.
Very interesting. Well, ladies and gentlemen, a lot of theater in Santa Fe, the Elliot Trilogy by Chiara Alegría Udes, runs in Santa Fe from September 26th through October 27th at Teatro Paraguas, the Santa Fe Playhouse. For more information, ironweedsantafe.com, teatroparaguas.org, and santafeplayhouse.org. Alex Hudson came up with basically the whole idea of doing all three of these plays together. So kudos to you, Alex, and you are director of the first play, Elliot, A Soldier's Fugue. Alex Hudson, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much, Mary Charlotte. It's been an honor.
The Radio Cafe wants to thank our sponsors, the Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation, the Lannan Foundation, the Lenzic, and Santa Fe Institute. Thank you for making this show possible. Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation moves public education in bold new directions through grants, programs, and advocacy, elevating interest and opportunities in STEM. Visit lanlfoundation.org for more information. And the Radio Cafe thanks the Lannel Foundation for their sponsorship of this show.